Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network Sports Update.
The Bills continue preparing to face the Texans in Houston this Sunday. The Texans have placed cornerback Kayvon Webster on IR for quad injury suffered in last week's win over the Cowboys. The Eagles will be facing the Giants tonight, but not without a few injuries. Giants tight end Evan Engram has been ruled out for tonight's game with a knee injury, and Eagles offensive tackle Lane Johnson is listed as questionable with an ankle injury. The NFL has fined Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin $25,000 for harsh words against the officials in Pittsburgh's 41-17 win over Atlanta. Tomlin voiced his frustration after the game where 14 penalty flags were thrown and accepted. Vikings cornerback Trey Waynes, is out of the concussion protocol, and he said he expects to play when Minnesota hosts the Cardinals. Waynes sustained a concussion before halftime in the Week 4 loss to the Rams, where he allowed a touchdown to Brandon Cooks. Despite having a 10-day break between games, the Colts may be without some key players against the Jets Sunday. Receiver T.Y. Hilton is out with a hamstring injury, tight end Jack Doyle with a hip injury. Both are considered week-to-week, and safety Clayton Gathers suffered a neck injury and concussion against New England last week and is in the concussion protocol. Falcons defensive tackles Grady Jarrett's fine for a hit on Eagles quarterback Nick Foles during the season opener has been rescinded by the NFL following an appeal. Jarrett was penalized for roughing Foles but insisted it was a legal hit since the beginning. And the Sabres host the Avalanche tonight. Puck drop at 7 p.m. You can catch pregame coverage on Sabres game night with Brian Duff and Martin Braun at 6:30 p.m. on MSG. And that is your sports update. Steve Tasker, along with Chris Brown on One Bills Live, we are pleased to be joined right now by a veteran of the NFL media who has covered the National Football League for 40 years, 43 years with the Houston Chronicle and the Houston Texans beat writer, NFL writer John McClain. John, thank you so much for joining us. Steve Tasker, along with Chris Brown on One Bills Live, how are you today?
And I've been covering the Oilers so long, I remember when covering the NFL here, I remember when Steve was an Oiler and the biggest mistake they ever made.
I don't know about the biggest mistake they ever made, but it was fun while it lasted.
But it worked out pretty well, didn't it?
For me, it did, yeah. What was the, since you've been doing this for so long, do you remember the first guy, first Houston Oiler you ever spoke to?
Let's see, that would have been in 1977 at training camp in Nacogdoches, Texas, where they stayed 1 year, and I went there at night, and the Major League Baseball All-Star game was on a black and white TV in the back of the dorm, and I'm a big baseball fan, and I sat down, I hadn't spoken to anybody, this blonde-headed guy came up, sat next to me, and I said, I'm John McClain from the Chronicle. And he goes, Wade Phillips. Wade Phillips would have been the first.
Wow, that's amazing. And here he is. He's in his 70s, still coaching and being coordinator. And you're still there at the Houston Chronicle as well. Although he's been around the block a few times. Looks like you stayed at home.
Yeah, I think it's so funny. Is there a team that Wade has not coached with?
I think that list is shorter than the one he has coached for. Yeah, you were listening to me. I wanted to ask you something about your Houston Texans. They got a quarterback and Deshaun Watson who, and I saw it the other night too, he is a tough cookie. Some of that, though, is self-inflicted, is it not, John?
A lot of it's self-inflicted, especially in the Cowboy game. He was sacked one time for 1 yard from the 1 yard line at the end of the first half. The offensive line. He was pressured 20% of the time in that game, according to NFL Next Generation stats. But when they were inside the 5 yard line and he could not get a receiver, he ran to the corner and got obliterated by three Cowboys twice, coming up short of a touchdown. And he was hit 10 times in that game, not counting his 10 carries. And only one of the carries did he slide. And so, like, my column today was all about he has got to reduce the number of hits, throw it away, slide. Don't keep trying to be a hero. And Bill O'Brien, the coach, says it's hard when a guy is so competitive and he's so close to a touchdown to tell him to go out of bounds or throw it away. But considering how beat up he is, they hoping that he learned a lesson. O'Brien said yesterday, and Steve, you know this, you learn your lessons from experience, and that's the most he's been beat up, and he's been hit more, but getting hit by multiple players trying to run for touchdowns, that's a first. And he didn't do that last year in his seven games, but all of a sudden this year he has been, and that might have been an offshoot of an 0-3 start.
See, but John, I know he's been sacked 18 times, and we just put up some stats here saying he's been hit 52 times this season. I had it even more than that just going off the NFL game books for the first 5 weeks, because in addition to those 18 sacks, I counted up 54 quarterback hits through the first five games. I mean, that's just 11 hits a game there, not even counting those sacks. So you're talking upwards of 13 without him even leaving the pocket necessarily, or at least getting past the line of scrimmage. I mean, this is not sustainable. He's not going to make it through 16 games.
Which is what Bill O'Brien said. This is not a sustainable way to play. Going into the Dallas game Sunday night, he was on a pace to be sacked 68 times and hit another 172 times. Well, they reduced the sacks, and a lot of those sacks are his fault for holding the ball too long. In the previous game against the Giants, their color guy, Andre Ware, former quarterback, was heard two times when he was holding the ball, throw it, throw it, throw it, boom. And we all could see it. Get rid of the ball. And so it's not that he doesn't know he's supposed to. He's competitive, but he has got to be much smarter when he's got the ball.
Well, a lot of times when a quarterback gets hit, everybody points to the offensive line. How is his offensive line playing in front of him, both passing in the passing game and in the running game? Is his O-line holding up there into the bargain?
His former Bills offensive lineman, Mike Devlin, is the coach, and Mike came there in 1993. I asked him if he was there for the choke, and he looked at me, and I said, the comeback in Buffalo.
Yeah.
And he said, no, I was there the year after. And Mike is a really good line coach. This is the first time this season he'll be able to start the same five. They're not very good. They don't have a lot invested in their line. The center, Nick Martin, was a two. This year they spent a three on a tackle, Martinez Rankin, who was benched last week. So across the board, they got two veteran free agents at guard. They have a left tackle, a fourth-round pick, and a right tackle who was an undrafted free agent. And they have a one and two twos, and I guarantee you that one is going to be an offensive tackle.
Yeah, because I was just looking at some of the games on the All-22, John, and it looks like some of their opponents have been able to generate pretty effective pressure, pretty consistent pressure just with a front four. I mean, what have you seen through the first five games? Have front fours had an unusual amount of success against that group?
Well, it started in the first game. Jontrell Henderson, whom you guys know very well, was firmly entrenched at right tackle, and then he suffered a season-ending broken ankle.
Right.
So they moved the left tackle to right tackle, bring in the rookie, put him at left tackle. Rankin, he had missed 3 months of the off-season program after having ankle surgery. So he was like thrown to the wolves, and he wasn't ready. And then the left guard, Senio Calamete, hurt his knee. So they have had a lack of continuity. We asked Mike Devlin this morning, what was it like to have your same five together for a second time? And he said, a miracle. And you guys know from continuity, the Bills are having similar problems because of injuries and retirement and trades. And it takes a while to do it, and it's tough when you got a young quarterback who's under pressure most of the time. The Texans were first in the league in rushing after the first two games. And in the last three, that missed Lamar Miller, they're starting back in the last game against the Cowboys. The backs have not been able to run worth a darn. And if it wasn't for Watson gaining yards, they wouldn't be 10th in the league. Their backs are averaging like 2 yards carry over the last three games. They get Lamar Miller back. But I think one reason they're pathetic in the red zone is teams don't respect them when they get inside the five-yard line. They don't respect the run. Everything is stopping the pass. When Arian Foster was here and Gary Kubiak got the ball inside the five, Foster was going to get it. So teams had to bunch up more defensive players, which left the wideouts open. And they were so much better in the red zone.
And yet he's thrown for 375 yards or more each of the last 3 weeks, despite all of these deficiencies.
Right, yeah.
It is funny that we're complaining, but and here's such a discrepancy. And when Watson went out last year, they were number one in red zone touchdowns, 67%. Had he been able to sustain that for the season, they would have led the NFL. Philadelphia was second at 65, but the Eagles ended up being first. So you have the same play caller in Bill O'Brien. You have the same quarterback in Deshaun Watson, more experienced. And right now, instead of 67%, they're 36%, and the only team worse is the Jets.
We're with One Bills Live with Chris Brown, Steve Tasker. We're speaking with John McClain, 43 years at the Houston Chronicle, and he's the Houston Texans beat writer. He's been covering the National Football League for four decades. And I want to ask you also, just stay on the defensive. Let's move to the defensive side of the ball for the Texans. They've got a lot of corners hurt. They've got their secondary has been ravaged a little bit. Talk a little bit about their pass defense, and we'll get to their front seven in a minute.
Their secondary, they have three new safeties. They move cornerback Kareem Jackson to safety. It's his ninth season. They used their top pick, which was a third rounder, on Justin Reed from Stanford, and he's been tremendous. And then they signed Tyrann Mathieu. So they have all new safeties, which was a weak position last year, and they've lost three of their top four corners in the last 3 weeks. So Jackson's seeing a lot more action at corner, along with Jonathan Joseph. Those two guys have been together since 2011, and Jackson's playing so well at safety, they don't want to move him, but they don't have anybody else. Kevin Johnson, Aaron Colvin, and now Kayvon Webster, they're gone. And they're lucky that Matthews played corner. Jackson has covered slot receivers for years. Justin Reed is fast enough and talented enough to where he can cover receivers, so they've been able to adjust, and of course it helps if they get a pass rush.
Yeah, their pass rush is really second to none. Jadeveon Clowney and J.J. Watt and Merciless. I mean, they're a special group, John. I mean, you've been covering it for a long time, but is there anybody in the history of the game that maybe matches these guys athletically?
Well, not many, because they're all very athletic, as you mentioned. And the thing is, they all missed the offseason program with injuries. Watt recuperating from the broken leg he suffered in the fifth game last year. Merciless had recuperated from the torn biceps that he had suffered in the same game last year. Merciless was healthy after the offseason. Then he really suffered a bad hamstring injury early in camp, missed the rest of camp, missed preseason. So it's almost like this is his preseason. We thought he had kind of come around against the Colts. He had three hits on a quarterback and a tackle for loss on a running play, and he didn't even show up on the stat sheet in the last game against the Cowboys. Watt is back to where he was in 2015 when he won his third consecutive NFL Defensive Player of the Year award, and Clowney got off to a really slow start, and in the last two games it has been great. So those two guys, Clowney plays linebacker, but he lines up outside. They'll move him over the middle. Watt sometimes will swap sides trying to create a mismatch, and it's really hard, I'm sure, for offensive coordinators to try to coordinate their protection to keep those two guys at bay.
Well, there's no question about it. The Buffalo Bills have allowed a league-high 22 sacks this season, and that being said, I mean, what do other teams do, I mean, besides get rid of the football with a three-step drop or try and run the football maybe right at them? What do teams use generally as a tactic against, you know, the front seven of the Texans that's playing so well?
When they went to Tennessee after losing at 7-7 at Gillette Stadium start the season, the Titans had their quarterback, their tight end, and their top three offensive tackles out. I picked the Texans to win, and they blew it because Blaine Gabbert, it was three steps and the ball was going somewhere. He was not going to hold that ball beyond three steps. It was a great strategy, and they won. They kind of won, beat the Texans like the Bills beat the Titans, you know, with field goals, good defense, and a running game. And then against the Cowboys Sunday night, Cowboys had Ezekiel Elliott. He came in, league-leading rusher, averaging 5.8 yards a carry, and the Texans just totally shut him down as runner and receiver. And because they don't have receivers, and the Texans played their best defensive game by far. And so I know based on what they saw Sean McDermott do in the Titans game, which is go back to throwback football, that everything will be about trying to contain LeSean McCoy and don't let Allen run, make him throw, keep him in the pocket. And they've been pretty good at that. But I'll say this, in the previous two games against Andrew Luck and Eli Manning, they just shredded the secondary. I mean, shredded them. And they lost to the Giants by 5, should have beaten them, and then they beat the Colts in overtime on the last play. So it'll be a good test for the Bills and Josh Allen. I'm really eager to see him. They also play Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold. The only one they miss is Josh Rosen. And after following those guys in the off season and last year in college, I'm eager to see Allen in person.
And then what, John, do you have for us, you know, for their special teams? Because, you know, we know Fairburn had the nice kick at the end last week, but their kick return unit looks to be right up there at the top. Their punt return unit's pretty good. Who's doing duty for them back there?
Well, they were awful in recent years as special teams. O'Brien's fired two coaches. He hired Brad Seeley, who's one of the best. Yeah. Brad won 3 rings in New England last year. He got caught up in the John Gruden purge. So Bill O'Brien, who knew him, jumped all over him, brought Seeley's two assistants. And instead of being a detriment like they have been, they've actually impacted field position. They got a new punter, a kid named Trevor Daniel from Tennessee, who beat out Shane Leckler fair and square, which surprised a lot of people. And then their return game, while they don't have a kid, Tyler Irvin, who's going to go the distance, he's doing it better than anybody they've had in recent years, and their coverage has been better. They gave up the worst thing about the special teams in Tennessee. They didn't cover one of the gunners, and he got a long touchdown pass, and we just killed them for that. But other than that one play, they've been very solid on special teams.
We're talking with John McClain, Houston Chronicles and the Houston Texan beat writer, covered the NFL for 40 years. And, John, I want to ask you something about the coaching staff of the Texans. It seems like they've got a great mix of a youngish head coach and Bill O'Brien, who's a real leader and a real hardcore guy and a no-nonsense type. You got Romeo Crennel on that staff. Talk a little bit about the staff that Bill O'Brien has put together and how he's perceived by the fan base in Houston.
Well, if you ask the fans here and the talk show host here, they want them all fired yesterday. If they win 2 overtime games in a row, it's not good enough. You know, you lose a close game in Tennessee, everybody wants O'Brien gone, and I do these national shows, and they ask me about his seat being hot. I said, yeah, it's so hot, he's got a 4-year extension that kicks in after the first of the year. He's not going anywhere. He's the one that coaches Watson, puts together the game plan, and calls the plays. And I think Bill's done a good job. He took over a 2-14 team, went 9-7 3 years in a row, won 2 division titles, went to the playoffs twice and won 1 game. And then last year they had 23 players on IR, including 13 starters. So it was understandable when they went as 4-12. People just kind of understood it and blew it off. But the slow start this year has just infuriated people. I think the staff's good. I know Romeo's good. O'Brien doesn't have an offensive coordinator, but one of the coaches he hired, John Pagano, was forever one of the best defensive coordinators in the NFL for the Chargers. And they got John. Timing was good to come in here to coach outside linebackers. And I think I know he does a good job. And so he's got a good staff. He makes changes every year. He doesn't stand pat. And their staff is good. And O'Brien takes a lot of grief, but that's why they pay him the big bucks.
There you go. John, thank you for this. We appreciate you taking the time here on
My
One Bills Live.
My pleasure, guys.
And, appreciate it.
Always wish fun to talk to
And
you.
I wish you another 40 years there at the Houston Chronicle, another and covering the NFL,
yeah, that's
my friend.
What my wife wants me to work till I'm 75. I told her, no way.
Right.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, John.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It. John McClain, Houston Chronicle,
he's
and
one of
the Texas
best.
Beat writer. He really is, and he's always been one of those guys. He's like a lot of local beat writers. Sometimes the team doesn't like him too much, but he usually has a pretty good handle.
Yeah, and always accommodating too. You know, we see him at the combine every year, and he's always been a big person in the PFWA.
Right.
You know, in terms of leading that group, and I mean, he's just quintessential professional. So, you know, certainly somebody that I respect in the business.
What do you think about some of the things he said, particularly about their defensive front? They're a nasty group. They are a this may be the best defensive front the Bills have faced.
That's the biggest concern for me. And I know I mentioned it when I was out on the practice field when I was on with you earlier. The concern for me is this isn't just good quality NFL talent. This is elite talent, like top five talent. You know, you're not going to find five jack linebackers that are better than Jadeveon Clowney in the NFL. You're not going to find five defensive ends in a 3-4 scheme that are better than J.J. Watt. So you have those two guys on opposite sides. How are you sliding your protection?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what are you doing when you have those two guys as bookends? It's really – that's a big ask.
Right.
You know, for any offensive line, let alone the Bills' offensive line.
And that's what you're up against. And I think also he said, you know, they've got a nondescript offensive line, a little bit like Buffalo's offensive line where you kind of put it together.
It sounds in rougher shape than
Bills'
line.
It does. And I think it's right. They didn't invest too much in it. No draft picks. They got a couple of – I got one guy who's an undrafted free agent playing right tackle. And but even having said that the pressure that Deshaun Watson, the quarterback, has been under hasn't all been because of the offensive line. They've been passable, I guess, is what we're saying.
Yeah. I think they're 20. I was looking up some PFF stats the other day. They're 27th in pass blocking efficiency. But you heard John say some of the problems for Watson are self-inflicted, whether he's holding on to the ball too long or taking off
he's a young quarterback. To
run.
He's still a young quarterback.
Yeah. I don't know. I think he just – he wants it all right now, and sometimes that's going to get the best of him. He's going to find himself on the sidelines again. You know, last year was kind of a freak injury with the knee, but he cannot keep taking hits like that. He's not going to get through 16 games.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because we talked a lot about all the stuff, and we never got into DeAndre Hopkins and how elite of a receiver he is. I was going to ask him about him and DeAndre Hopkins and Tre'Davious White and that matchup and what he was looking for there. But there's no – I mean, what are you going to ask him? How good is – DeAndre Hopkins, he's really good.
Confirmed.
Yeah. Confirmed, exactly. But that's, you know, I think this game, these are two teams I think that right now are playing football a little bit alike. Where they're, but with the exception of, I think they're throwing the football better with DeAndre Hopkins. But their red zone offense has deserted them. And he's right. John McClain told us last year their red zone offense was really good, and they were scoring points in bundles. They had the number one offense, scoring offense for 5 weeks of the season in one stretch when right before Deshaun Watson got hurt. They had the number one scoring offense and the number one defense going. They were putting it together in a big hurry down there. And like he said, 11 starters go off the field on IR, and it all came apart.
They're having a tough time getting those tough yards down there. You know, when the space is tight down in the red zone, nobody's respecting them in terms of running the football down in there. So they're playing coverage and covering up the end zone and all the receivers because they know they're largely a one-dimensional offense.
Right.
I mean, you look at some of their rushing numbers, you know, as far as what they've been able to do this season. You know, Lamar Miller's been out the last couple of weeks. He's still the leading rusher, but Watson's only 24 yards behind him in terms of rushing. So, I mean, they got to get their run game going. Which is something that we hear every week here in Buffalo.
All right, we're gonna take a break. We're gonna come back with more on the Buffalo at Houston Texans matchup coming up. We've got some stuff from Bill Belichick, Joe Flacco, and what Joe Flacco's wife told him. Derek Anderson, new quarterback for the Buffalo Bills, is coming on, and lots more. We've got a Twitter poll we're gonna reset after the break. This is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown. Murph is off for today. We are running along with this little Twitter poll we've got.
What matchup are you most looking forward to this Sunday as the Buffalo Bills take on the Houston Texans? One is Tre'Davious White versus DeAndre Hopkins. Another is the Houston defensive ends versus the Bills offensive line. Josh Allen against a Houston secondary that has been depleted, by the way. And or LeSean McCoy versus the 8th-ranked run defense in the National Football League. 59% of the people already go with Tre'Davious White versus DeAndre Hopkins. 22% say Josh Allen versus the Houston secondary. 10% Houston D and Bills O-line. And 9% say LeSean McCoy against the 8th-ranked run defense. We have some people chiming in on the tweet sheet. This from a guy named Jello. Every game, yeah, what can I say? I just read what's in front of me. Every game this season, I look forward to watching Allen and seeing if or how he's progressed from the last game. The second, I keep looking for a receiver to finally step up and become the go-to guy. I don't know if we have anyone right now capable of it. That from a guy named Jello on the tweet sheet. And if you want to get in on this Twitter conversation we're having, you can call us at 803-0550 or 1-888-552-550, or you can at us at One Bills Live on Twitter. Also from Chris Rolek on the tweet sheet, definitely looking forward to the Trey matchup against Hopkins. I think our pass rush will be really successful against Watson, who tends to hold the ball and take a lot of sacks. You know he's going to use his biggest weapon, so hopefully we can force him into some tight throws. That from Chris Rolek, which is, you know, a lot of people are right there with him. I think that matchup between Tre'Davious White and DeAndre Hopkins is really something a lot of people are going to be watching outside of Bills Houston's fan base.
The only shame of it is for television viewers, you know, that's often not in the frame unless he's being thrown to, and even then it's at the tail end of the play. I mean, obviously they'll have all different angles, and I'm sure they'll have some ISO cameras on those two guys, but you know how football broadcasts work. You know, they're going to be following the ball and the quarterback and all of that. So.
If the analyst – I think it. Who is it? Is it Andrew Catalan and James Lofton? That's exactly who it is. It's my friend Andrew Catalan, my former teammate and good friend James Lofton. They're doing the game this week. James may have that, being a Hall of Fame wide receiver. Maybe he'll put that at the top of his list. Have an ISO monitor on DeAndre Hopkins.
I would think.
Wouldn't
they
you
would.
Have to?
Yeah.
Maybe I should text him, tell him to do that. For
hey,
us.
Just a thought.
Hey, listen, I've got a radio show next week. Could you get me some ISO tape of...
Do me a solid here.
Do me a solid and change your entire broadcast for my wishes. Yeah, he might not do that. But I really do. I think, listen, Tre'Davious White is as good a corner as there is in the National Football League right now. Last year he burst onto the scene as a rookie and everybody was, wow, look at that guy. Now it's becoming commonplace. The guy is a shutdown corner. He does it every week and holds guys off the board. And DeAndre Hopkins is one of those guys that... you won't hold off the board. I mean, he's going to get some catches. He's going to get some catches. There's no way around it. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how good Trey White can do it. And you see there, for those people watching on MSG, DeAndre Hopkins, most reception yards through the first five games since 2000. And he is number 5 on that list behind Wes Welker, Santana Moss, Steve Smith Sr., Isaac Bruce, Santana Moss all the way back in 2005. He's got DeAndre Hopkins, 594 yards. Of course, in 2011, Wes Welker had 740 through five games. That's when the 2011 year when he was still with the Patriots.
Yeah.
That was pre-Peyton Manning and Denver Bronco move for Wes Welker. But that's through five games, he's got 594 yards of receiving. He had 151 last week on 9 receptions. I think I remember that right. And we all saw the overtime catch that he made in the spin moves and run.
The run might have been better than the catch.
Yeah, no question. The run was better than the catch. The catch was, you know, an easy grab, but that run afterwards that put him down inside the field goal range was something special. In this poll where everybody has an opinion, the correct answer is the one that agrees with me. Tre'Davious White and DeAndre Hopkins is the matchup you should most look forward to. And I know Houston's defensive ends, and I think I fall in line with a lot of Bills fans. I don't want to see that because I don't know if we can hold up.
Yeah, you're worried it's going to be a
mismatch. Worried it's going to go the wrong way. Josh Allen against the Houston secondary, that may be one that has a chance to be a pleasant surprise.
That was actually the top thing on Murph's storylines this week on BuffaloBills.com. Right. You know, another road test for Josh Allen. And
it's true.
You know, against a beat-up secondary, maybe some of those windows are a little bigger.
Yeah.
But how much do you do you want him doing a five-step drop against this defensive front? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I think he's got to find somebody fast, get rid of the football, and if he can, then that's what it needs to be.
And that's a loud building, too. I mean, again,
yeah,
you're talking about another road atmosphere. I think they want to make quick, easy decisions or put quick, easy decisions in front of Josh so he's not back there patting the ball. Because if he pats the ball one time, two times, he's going to be on his back.
I still think the Bills are looking to really, for the first time, or not for the first time, but to put more than 13 points up, too. I mean, they struggled against the Texans. The Titans in that. They've got to put more than 13 points on the
board. I don't know. I just think it, for some reason, I think it's going to be a grinded out type game just like last week.
I think it will.
And that's perfectly fine by the Bills.
Well, listen, those games tend to be close.
In those games.
Yeah, those games tend to be close. When the Bills drop down by two scores, you know,
they're not a come from behind.
Yeah, they're not built for it. Josh Allen is not ready to be throwing the football all over the yard 45 times. And if they get put into that situation, the Bills are going to be up against it. Deshaun, there's no question Deshaun Watson. Forget what you're hearing about him being questionable or day-to-day. He's going to play. And I think the answers that you find for Deshaun Watson, I think if they can get him, keep him in the pocket, force him to play quarterback and take DeAndre Hopkins away, then maybe you're trying to force the Texans to beat you left-handed. It's not something they're really ready to do.
Right. So – and what about Murph's second storyline in his story this week? What about the run game? Is it okay to rely on that now?
It wasn't
super productive last week, but it did the job.
Absolutely. And they found, I think, creative ways to do it.
It is a top 10 run defense they're facing.
I mean, we spoke at the top of the show when you were out at practice about different personnel formations, different personnel combinations and formations with shifts and motions, plus, you know, going heavy at times to try and keep the Texans off balance. But the run game can't evaporate if the Bills want to have a chance to win. And then the ability to keep the game close and to stay with the running game, even when they haven't had much success, I think is crucial for Josh Allen, for the team, and for the defense to keep them on the sidelines for a little bit so they don't come out and those three and outs are just not acceptable.
Yeah. I thought Murph's most interesting one in his top seven storylines on BuffaloBills.com, which defensive rookie steps up next? We've seen Taron Johnson. We've seen Tremaine Edmonds.
This is a team that needs to get turnovers, and that defense is where it's going to happen. The Bills just cannot give it away offensively. They've got to stay competitive offensively, stay on the field if they can offensively, even if they're not going to score 35 points. But the defense has got to get the Texans off the field, and if they don't, they got to get turnovers.
Right.
I mean, that's the recipe that they've got to really live by.
Yeah, well, you look at it. I mean, last week they're a plus two. They get three takeaways, get one giveaway off a deflected pass reception, and they finish plus two, and they win by one. You know, and granted, they had 3 points come off the board on a botched situation on a field goal snap. But I think they're going to have to finish plus two almost every week to have a chance to win football games.
Right.
And that's not saying they can't do it. Because they have, and when they do, they win. So, hey, stick with the formula, man.
Oh, yeah.
That's easier said than done. I get it. Because, you look at Watson's numbers, and as much as he's been hit, you know, you figure a guy under duress might be a little gun-shy. 8 picks against 5 interceptions. And, you know, you look at the Texans, and they've lost only 3 fumbles on the year.
Right.
So knowing how much they've thrown the football and how much Watson has gone out and scrambled around, that's right. Not too many giveaways.
That's right. Yeah, you're with Steve Tasker and Chris Brown on One Bills Live. We're talking about the Bills-Texans this week, and Murph is out today. So in his absence, we're talking about the story he wrote for BuffaloBills.com, 7 storylines for the Bills and Texans this week. And we've been over and over this a bunch, and what it boils down to is two really good defensive fronts, two young quarterbacks,
the Buffalo Bills' strength would probably be our secondary. The Texans' secondary has been depleted, but the Bills' passing game has not been able to take advantage of anything. I mean, these two teams' strengths and weaknesses mesh almost perfectly to make this game like a 2-0, epic performance by these defenses. I mean, it really looks like it's going to be a low-scoring game. That's really if the Houston Texans' red zone offense doesn't snap out of the funk that it's in.
Yeah, which is why, did you read this Twitter post from Brian Cook? Because
I thought this was interesting as
Sunday's game is being discussed here, because he was talking about the matchups on your Twitter
post. Go ahead,
read it. He was saying Josh Allen versus the Houston secondary, but he doesn't he says Allen versus the Houston secondary, but then he mentions Chris Ivory. So he says the reason's because their depth issues related to injury issues in the secondary, which we've covered. But he said if we can scheme to get Ivory to the secondary, running over corners and safeties early, it can pay big dividends late in the game. Tough to cover wide receivers if you've been bulldozed all game. There's some merit to that, but I don't know how you scheme to get Ivory to the secondary.
If Chris Ivory's running through the secondary, you're not throwing it. You're going to keep running Ivory into the secondary.
Which is why I'd be doing Ivory versus the secondary.
And maybe if Chris Ivory does catch the ball and get loose and starts punishing some people. As I know this, too, and this is, we had John McClain from the Houston Chronicle on the show earlier, and he remembers the Houston Oilers and Earl Campbell and all those guys. If you've got a guy like Earl Campbell and a guy like Chris Ivory showed against the Titans, those guys in the secondary get sick of tackling them in the fourth quarter. There's no question that that's a thing. It's true. Those guys come up and they start shying away from the contact. And it does pay dividends. That's why you hear about running backs who get stronger as the game goes on. It's because those guys on defense are just sick to death of getting hit and hitting the guy. And so there is some merit to that. But I think if the game is going offensively well enough for Chris Ivory to be banging guys in the secondary, you're not going to be needing to throw the football to take advantage of it. Am I right? I mean, that's the way you see it, right?
Yeah, and with the way Ivory ran late in the game last week, you almost would be encouraged to run him in that fashion earlier. I asked LeSean McCoy after Sunday's game, how advantageous is it for you, with the style of runner you are, to have someone who is the polar opposite in Chris Ivory? How much does that help set up runs for you, knowing that opposing defense is finding it so hard to adjust from one of you to the other? You bring in LeSean McCoy, and he's shaking you out of your shoes, and then all of a sudden here comes Ivory, and he's just going to run you over. And then you go back to McCoy, and it's like you're jitterbugging around again, trying to get your feet under you to make a tackle. And LeSean said, no, it is a help. It is a help because we are so different that when we go from one to the other, from one play to the next – they're grasping at air because they're trying to brace themselves. Oh, it's 25. It's not 33.
Right.
There's an adjustment there that I think sometimes is difficult for defensive players to make from one play to the next or even one series to the next.
We're going to push back the Bill Belichick soundbite that we got from his press conference yesterday. I know a lot of people have seen it. We'll do it in the next segment. But if you want to chime in on our Twitter poll, you can. What matchup are you most looking forward to this Sunday as the Buffalo Bills take on the Texans? Tre'Davious White versus DeAndre Hopkins. 59% of you say that's it. Houston defensive ends against the Buffalo Bills offensive line. Only 11% think that's worth watching. 22% of you think it's Josh Allen against the Houston secondary. And 8% are looking forward to seeing LeSean McCoy against the 8th-ranked run defense of the Texans. We're going to take a break. Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown on One Bills Live. We're going to come back, do some more stuff. Derek Anderson's coming in at 2 in just about 15 minutes. We're going to do NFL True False and some other stuff from around the league when we get back. This is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio, presented by Kaleida Health. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown. Murph is out today. We've got a couple of things going on with our Twitter poll, of course. Which matchup are you most looking forward to this Sunday as the Buffalo Bills take on the Texans? If you want to get in on it, you can. 803-0550 or 1-888-550-2550. You can tweet at us at One Bills Live. Brownie, I don't know if you watched. One of the things I get to do as a CBS guy is go around the country and all the NFL teams and sit down with these head coaches and players and talk in production meetings. So I have a chance once in a while to sit down with guys, and Bill Belichick's one of them. I've sat down in the room with him and asked him about his team, how the game's going to go, and all that yickety-yak, you know, and we get access. And he's obviously a really intelligent guy, and he's a much different guy than some people perceive. And I know Bill's fans think he's the Antichrist, but...
Yeah, looking for the horns.
Right, exactly. They think he's got a prehensile tail and carries a pitchfork. But I will say this. Something came up on Twitter, and he does these, just like Sean McDermott in Buffalo, just like Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh, you know, Belichick has to come up in front of the local media a couple of times a week and say it. And some, some of his press conferences are epic in their... in his disdain for actually having to do it. And there, something happened yesterday. They asked him a couple of questions yesterday. We're going to play it for you here, which is, you know, kind of unprecedented here. But I belly laughed last night when a buddy of mine sent it to me.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, I got to share it with you. So this is Bill Belichick yesterday being asked. They play the Kansas City Chiefs. Chiefs are 5-0, headed in to New England, or I don't know whether the game is in New England or if it's in Kansas City, and I'm off the top of my head, I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Irrelevant to the matter we're talking about now, though. This is Bill Belichick in his midweek press conference with the local media in New England talking about the Kansas City Chiefs.
Coach, you feel like you're playing for the top seed in the AFC with this game, that the stakes are that big?
I feel like we're playing Kansas City.
Does it seem like a higher stakes game than normal?
Feels like we're playing Kansas City.
Has there ever been a quarterback in Chicago who, outside of the pocket, when you think about that pocket, as successful?
That's a pretty good quarterback now.
So does Hill remind you at all of Eric Metcalf?
Yeah, no.
What player was he asking?
Eric Metcalf.
No, I know Eric Metcalf. Who was he asking if it reminds him of?
Tyreek Hill.
Oh, okay.
So they asked, does this game have more meaning, like the top seed in the conference? And Bill says, now does it feel like it's a bigger game? He says, now it feels like we're playing the Chiefs. And he goes, well, and he said, have you ever seen a young quarterback running around like this having this much success? Have you ever seen a quarterback? And Bill looked at him and said, we've seen some pretty good quarterbacks now.
Yeah.
You know, so he's like, come on.
Pump the brakes.
And then, of course, they asked him about Eric Metcalf. Does this guy remind you of Eric Metcalf? He goes, yeah, no.
The fascinating thing to me is how you even transcribe, like as a media member, how do you even transcribe an interview like that? Because his lips barely move. He mumbles these answers out.
Yeah.
And, you know, speaking from the media perspective, because I hear this a lot from the New England reporters, I mean, they're just miserable.
Oh.
Going to his press conferences because he gives them absolutely nothing, which is what he wants to do. He doesn't want to give anybody anything. He doesn't want to give anybody bulletin board material, none of that stuff. So
you ask him about the other team, even then he'll give you the whole roster. He never even picks out one of their
players. He'll give you something there, but something on his own team.
Every one of their players is really good.
Yeah, something on his own team is like getting water from a stone.
It's guys like that, too, that brought about this effect. And even I'm a victim. I'm a huge victim of it. When I talk to guys like this or I'm interviewing, even on this show, and I mean, I try to remember, it has trained media guys to not to ask questions. It's to say, talk about this, you know, and just to try and get them to open up and talk about it. And it's become a huge problem because it's so easy to dodge questions that you don't want to ask them questions.
And
you
try to
get them to talk.
You try to ask open-answered questions.
Open-ended questions,
don't give you an opportunity to provide a one-word answer. And even that can be difficult sometimes because the interview subject will sometimes just say, well, just answer with whatever answer they want, which may not even be related in any way, shape, or form to the topic you're asking about. They're just going to answer it the way they want and not really address the question in any way, shape, or form. Yeah. So I get why the New England-based media gets frustrated with him when they're trying to do stories on players on that roster or the way a side of the ball might be performing. You don't go to Belichick for the answers because you're not going to get what you're looking for there. You got to go to players, and then those players are trained to be guarded in what they say. And so covering that team is a heavy lift, for those guys. I mean, I don't envy the fact that they're covering – I mean, I do envy the fact that they're covering a team that's perennially successful.
Nobody's shedding tears for those guys.
It's not easy to get, the meat and potatoes type quotes that you need to write stories. So from that standpoint, it can get difficult.
Yeah, one of the other things, too, and, you know, coaches have to answer questions. Coaches have to answer questions, and players always have to answer questions, particularly guys who are married. Joe Flacco was quoted this week, and if you don't know, let me give you a little background. So the Ravens draft Lamar Jackson, big athletic quarterback.
Yep.
Drew it in the end of the first round, noted, but he's still in the first round. So they feel like they have to justify that draft pick, so they give him a package. Buffalo Bills fans saw it in week one where they put Lamar Jackson on the field at quarterback and split Joe Flacco out wide. Well, they've continued to do it throughout the first 5 weeks of the season, and if you've ever watched Joe Flacco play wide receiver, it is it's him doing his imitation of the Statue of Liberty. I mean, he's standing there and he doesn't move. And he said, he was quoted, he said, "My wife gave me crap the one day. He told me I needed to look more interested out there, but I'm just trying to stay out of it. I'm not comfortable out there and I don't need to get too creative. You can see me. I'm out there just standing. I just try to stay out of the way of everything. That's what I'm told to do and that's what I'm doing." So his wife is saying, "Hey, man, pick it up a little bit." And he's like, "I'm supposed to do."
If I'm Joe, I'm saying, you remember what shape my back was in last year?
I know,
I'm not
right?
going to engage in any kind of contact. Well, I don't need to.
Honey, I know better. All right, so we're going to take a break. Derek Anderson, the new Buffalo Bills quarterback, is going to come in here with us. He's going to be on set with us in studio right after the break, so stay with us. This is presented by Kaleida Health, One Bills Live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.